This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations. Futuro.
So it's Sunday, March 7, and it's about to be, 11 a.m., and right now I'm in Matamoros, Mexico. I'm in a small plaza that is right next to where the migrant tent encampment is.
I recorded this audio earlier this year, the day after a migrant camp just across from Brownsville in South Texas was cleared out. For almost 2 years, it was the home for hundreds of mostly Central Americans and Mexicans seeking asylum in the U.S., most had finally been allowed into the U.S. Some were sent to nearby shelter before they could be processed into the country. Others, however, were left in limbo.
And I'm looking inside and it's really, really quiet. I'm used to, hearing, kids, families, moms, dads talking to each other, running around, playing. It's really, really quiet now.
At one point, this now empty area held more than 3,000 asylum seekers forced to wait in Mexico as their cases made their way through U.S. immigration courts. Historically, for decades, people had always been allowed to remain in the U.S. while seeking asylum. It's their right under U.S. law and international treaty obligations. But the Trump administration disregarded all of that when it established the Remain in Mexico policy, officially known as the Migrant Protection Protocols, or MPP. The policy first rolled out in January of 2019 in Southern California and slowly spread across the entire southern border.
As I walk by, the tents are here. They're empty. I see firewood, branches. I see little tables. I see shoes, that have been left behind. It's kind of crazy that it's now closed.
I met so many families who had been living in this camp without much help from either the Mexican or U.S. governments. They endured a hurricane, a freeze, deaths in the Rio Grande, a pandemic, scorching 100-degree summers, extortion and violence from criminal organizations, and so much more.
And I would always wonder, when would it be that this migrant camp, would close? When would there be a day that when I cross into Matamoros, that this tent encampment, wouldn't exist? And almost 2 years later, that day has arrived.
From Futuro Media, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Today, immigration policies under President Joe Biden. 6 months into his administration, what's changed and what hasn't? On the campaign trail, then-candidate Joe Biden made a lot of promises related to immigration.
Within 100 days, I'm going to send to the United States Congress a pathway to citizenship for over 11 million undocumented people. And all of those so-called dreamers, those DACA kids, they're going to be immediately certified again to be able to stay in this country and put on a path to citizenship. All those people are seeking asylum. They deserve to be heard. That's who we are. We're a nation that says if you want to flee and you're fleeing oppression, you should come.
A half year has gone by since Biden took office, and some immigrant rights advocates are saying that things are happening just too slowly. In fact, critics say that some of the messaging coming from this White House actually contradicts what Biden said during his campaign. And they say at times it sounds all too similar to former President Donald Trump's positioning.
I can say quite clearly, don't come. And what we're in the process of getting set up, and it's not going to take a whole long time, is to be able to apply for asylum in place. So don't leave your town or city or community.
Now is not the time to come, and the vast majority of people will be turned away. Asylum processes at the border will not occur immediately, will take time to implement.
The United States will continue to enforce our laws and secure our border. So let's discourage our friends, our neighbors, our family members from embarking on what is otherwise an extremely dangerous journey.
On June 1st of this year, President Biden delivered on his promise to officially end the Remain in Mexico policy. His administration has also allowed several thousand migrants with active cases into the U.S., including those from the Matamoros camp. Still, while the Remain in Mexico policy is now dead on paper, its long-term impacts have survived under Joe Biden. The president has also chosen to keep in place Title 42 expulsions, which is another restriction imposed by his predecessor, Donald Trump. Our producer, Reynaldo Leaños Jr., is based in the Rio Grande Valley of South Texas on the U.S.-Mexico border, and he's going to pick up the story from here.
Estábamos nosotras aquí en el campamento. De cierta forma no teníamos una buena vida como tal porque ningún ser humano merece vivir como vivíamos nosotros ahí en el puente. Pero por causas de problemas que tuve, me fui del campamento.
That's Maribel. In 2019, she and Diana, her partner of 6 years, arrived in Matamoros, Mexico. They had embarked on a more than 1,000-mile journey from their home country of Cuba, determined to cross into the U.S. and request asylum. They dreamed of a life in a country where they would not be discriminated against because of their sexual orientation. But when they arrived in Matamoros, they were prevented from entering the U.S., forced to initiate their U.S. asylum application while in Mexico, and wait in Mexico under the migrant protection protocols. We're not using Maribel's or Diana's real names because they don't want their cases to be jeopardized. At the camp in Matamoros, Maribel says she and Diana were constant targets of homophobia, harassment, and threats. Just days before her final court date in February 2020, and while Diana was at a hearing in Brownsville, Maribel says she received yet another threat. She was so shaken, she decided it was best that they both leave the border.
Y pues yo decidí que nos fuéramos de Matamoros por el tema de que no nos pasara nada porque teníamos miedo.
They would end up in Mexico City, about a 12-hour drive from the border, and Maribel missed her court date. The audio you've been hearing from her is from a conversation we had in March, a day after the Matamoros camp was dismantled. Maribel and Diana had heard that people in MPP were starting to be let in. In fact, Diana received a phone call from the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, saying that she would soon be processed into the country and be allowed to continue her asylum claim in the U.S., the way it used to be, pre-Trump. Unfortunately, the story was different for Maribel. After leaving Matamoros and missing her final hearing, Maribel was ordered removed in absentia, and she no longer had an active MPP case. Unlike Diana, she wasn't being welcomed into the U.S.
Y se me hace injusto que no me dejen pasar con ella. Se me hace muy injusto de que porque tengo el caso inactivo, porque ya no tengo un caso activo, porque ya tengo deportación, se me hace injusto que no me den la oportunidad de volver a comenzar y de entrar con ella.
Kenji Kazuka is the Associate Director of Research and Analysis of Refugee Protection at Human Rights First. He explains exactly how this first phase of the MPP wind-down is working.
People who are in MPP are told to register through an app called Connecta, and that's operated by the UN Refugee Agency. And once they're registered, they should receive a call from UNHCR, the refugee agency, and have a short interview to confirm their information. And eventually they're given a date and time and place to appear for processing.
The next steps are getting a COVID test and giving an address in the U.S., which helps to assign applicants to their nearest immigration court.
And then they're escorted to the port of entry And very quickly, within a matter of minutes, usually, CBP is able to process people, hand them their documents, and send them on their way.
Again, this process is only for those who have active MPP cases, like Diana. The idea of remaining in Mexico without Diana indefinitely caused so much stress in Maribel that her hair began to fall out. Still, her hope remained strong.
Tengo la fe de que algo tiene que suceder para nosotros. Y pues, no sé. Aquí estamos luchando. No nos queremos rendir todavía.
Their patience seemed to be paying off. After hearing about the administration change and the imminent end of MPP, they decided to return to Matamoros. They were still afraid of the dangers of the border, but they had to go back. When I first met Maribel and Diana back in the summer of 2019, they were living in a small tent right next to other LGBTQ asylum seekers. They had formed this tight-knit community to help and look out after one another. At the camp, Diana described to me some of the homophobia they had experienced.
Nos dicen marimachas, nos dicen que ese es el lado de las lesbianas. A la trans que está acá le han ofrecido dinero por ir a bailar en un nightclub. Venimos al río a lavar o a bañarnos y hay un señor que nos ha amenazado en varias ocasiones, se baña desnudo delante de nosotras, dice que necesita una mujer para que le dé masaje.
They called them derogatory terms. A man would expose himself when they wash clothes or bathe in the river, and a trans woman had been harassed to dance at a nightclub. Her name is Mayela, a migrant from El Salvador. In October 2019, Mayela crossed the border with the help of an attorney. Their argument was that as part of a vulnerable population, she deserved to be allowed into the U.S. and taken out of MPP, which allows for exclusions on a case-by-case basis. Hours before she left the camp, Maribel had some parting and encouraging words for her.
No vayas a llorar.
No llores.
Cuando estés ahí hablando,
no es cuestión de que hablar, lástima.
Porque ahí no es una cosa de que ay, voy a llorar porque ya no aguanto más. No, fuerte. Sí. Y cuando vayas a hablar, mantén la palabra fuerte, firme. Ni okay. Una lágrima, ni que me
hagas. Con bases,
y ya no aguanto más y por
diciendo.
Favor. No, okay. Fuerte, firme para que ellos crean en ti. Si lloras,
ya me voy.
Para México.
Ahí nos vemos. Primeramente fuerte. Dios. Nos vemos del otro lado.
Dale que nos vemos.
Mayela and Maribel said to each other that they would reunite on the other side of the river. Mayela's successful crossing brought hope to the group of LGBTQ asylum seekers, especially because help was on their way. One day later, then-presidential Democratic candidate Julian Castro stopped by the migrant camp with the goal of crossing them into the U.S.
Yo pienso que hoy sí logremos entrar y que no nos regresen, que nos saquen del MPP, yo pienso que sí.
Migrants had made plans about what they wanted to do once they were on the U.S. side. Some made calls to family members, friends, telling them to expect their arrival pretty soon. Secretary Castro was welcomed with cheers. And after spending some time at the camp, he crossed the Gateway International Bridge with Maribel, Diana, and the rest of the LGBTQ asylum seekers into the U.S. However, their hope was short-lived. A few hours later, the entire group of migrants were sent back to Mexico.
Yo presenté mis pruebas, presenté testigo también, testimonio. Pero realmente me dijeron de que a ellos no les importaba lo que estaba pasando aquí. No pude hacer nada, no.
Extremely discouraged, Maribel felt the government just wanted to wear them down so they could give up and leave.
Yo pensé que ya la pesadilla iba a acabar, que íbamos a tener una oportunidad de poder ser libres, pero me di cuenta de que no, de que todo lo que están haciendo aquí con el proceso en PP es una farsa.
Both Maribel and Diana would not give up. In February of this year, they headed back to Matamoros. 3 months later, Diana was finally allowed into the U.S. as part of President Biden's MPP wind-down. Maribel stayed on the other side of the border, but not for too long. I learned from an activist that she couldn't bear to be miles away from Diana, and that in May, she decided she would cross the river into the U.S. I tried to get in contact with her, but I was unable to. In June, BuzzFeed News reported that there would be a phase two of the MPP wind-down. Here's Kenji from Human Rights First again.
There are still many, many people waiting in Mexico who are now eligible for this next phase of the MPP wind-down. Those cases were either closed or denied in absentia or in the absence of the person at their hearing. So the immigration court case needs to be reopened. And so that's going to take a little bit more time for the government to get those cases reopened.
In addition to the people who are covered by both phase one and phase two, Kenji says more needs to be done.
There were many asylum seekers who were denied protection after a hearing. They had an opportunity to present their claim, but from our perspective, it wasn't a fair opportunity. Many people had to go ahead in their cases without an attorney. They had to prepare their asylum applications and supporting materials while living in a shelter or in a camp, sleeping in a tent outside. These weren't fair conditions for people to be able to present claims for asylum. And so we hope to see another phase of the wind down of MPP that would include them as well.
And then there are the long-term effects of the people who went through MPP.
The people who were affected by MPP are going to bear those scars, the emotional scars, the physical scars for a lifetime. I think there's going to be just years and years of trauma for those families and individuals to sort out. And of course, they're not in the clear legally because they still need to continue with their asylum claims in the U.S. and find some permanent protection. So it's a struggle that's not over, and it won't be for a long time for many of these folks.
During a debate last year against President Trump, Biden criticized the Remain in Mexico policy.
That's never happened before in America. That's never happened before in America. You come to the United States and you make your case that I seek asylum based on the following premise, why I deserve it under American law. They're sitting in squalor on the other side of the river.
6 months into his administration, Biden has kept in place a Trump-era policy that essentially does the same thing as MPP. It forces migrants to remain in Mexico without being able to access asylum in the U.S.
Coming up on Latino USA, we stop by the Mexican border town of Reynosa, where another migrant camp has popped up, this time due to a different Trump-era policy that the Biden administration has kept in place. Stay with us. No te vayas.
Climate change affects everyone, but it doesn't affect everyone equally. Immigrants often bear a unique burden due to climate change, but they're also leading the way with impactful solutions. Feet in Two Worlds, the news outlet and journalism training organization for immigrant voices, presents Home Interrupted. From flooded basement apartments in New York City to indigenous Maya farming practices in Nebraska, Feet in Two Worlds, Home Interrupted brings you deeply reported original stories from across the United States. Episodes drop each week starting April 2nd. Find Feet in Two Worlds, Home Interrupted wherever you listen to podcasts. Support for Latino USA comes from Odoo. If you feel like you're wasting time and money with your current business software or just want to know what you could be missing, then you need to join the millions of other users who switched to Odoo. Odoo is the affordable all-in-one management software with a library of fully integrated business applications that help you get more done in less time for a fraction of the price. To learn more, visit odoo.com/latino. That's odoo.com/latino. Odoo, modern management made simple.
Hey, we're back. Before the break, we heard about the impact of MPP on asylum seekers, as well as the wind down of that policy under President Biden. Reynaldo Leaños Jr. is going to pick up the rest of the story from Reynosa, Mexico, where there's a new migrant camp.
My name is Victor Cavazos. I'm one of the directors of the Sidewalk School. We are mainly a school for migrant children, but we give all kinds of resources. We take people to the doctor. We pay for medicine. We put people up in apartments. We give food, clothing.
The Sidewalk School had been migrants at the camp in Matamoros. Now, their work is mostly concentrated in Reynosa, about an hour west, where another migrant camp of about 1,000 people and counting has sprouted up over the last few months. Unlike the camp in Matamoros, it isn't the Remain in Mexico program that is keeping migrants on this side of the border. It's the so-called Title 42 expulsions, another legacy of the Trump administration.
In March 2020, the Trump administration Centers for Disease Control and Prevention issued an order under Title 42 of the U.S. Code, which is a public health law. And under one section of that law, there was a provision about preventing the introduction of people or goods that could spread a communicable disease. And that provision had never before been used as an immigration provision to expel people.
That's Kenji again.
And it certainly had never been used to block refugees from seeking asylum protection in the United States. So the Department of Homeland Security under the Trump administration started to use that order to effectively eliminate asylum protections at the border, and they began to expel people summarily without any legal process, just taking essentially their photo and fingerprints and then pushing them back across the border immediately.
Kenji has closely followed the implementation of Title 42.
From the beginning, public health experts and even the CDC's own internal experts have said that there was no real public health justification for the policy.
Last November, a court ordered that unaccompanied children not be expelled, but the Trump administration continued to do so. This February, the Biden administration said it would not expel unaccompanied children. However, families with children and single adults continue to be expelled, for the most part.
It seems to depend on the nationality of the family, but it could also be the time or the day or the place that the family arrives and tries to cross the border. It maybe depends on how much capacity the Border Patrol has that day or just what mood they're in. It's really not clear what rules or policies are being applied to decide who gets expelled to Mexico and who is allowed to stay.
These expulsions mean migrants continue to be pushed back to Mexico, where they are at risk of violence.
Since January 2021, when the Biden administration took office, we've been able to track over 3,200 incidents of violent attacks on migrants and asylum seekers.
One place that has been pretty dangerous for migrants is Reynosa. That's where I met up with Victor, who you heard from earlier.
It's necessary, and I don't have a choice. That's it, I just don't have a choice. I know if I don't do it, it's not gonna get done.
It's mid-June and I'm driving with Victor to a plaza where many migrants are living. It's about a block away from the McAllen-Hidalgo-Reynosa International Bridge that connects this city to the U.S.
Right now we're gonna pick up a man from the plaza here in Reynosa who has COVID. And his son.
Victor's going to move a Honduran father who has COVID and his son out of the camp to help limit the spread of the virus there. He wants to relocate them to a nearby shelter named Senda de Vida, where they have a special quarantine unit for migrants with COVID. It's part of what he does, identify vulnerable migrants and relocate them to that shelter, where they'll be safer than living in the plaza.
We also work with a group of lawyers who look for special cases. So here in Reynosa, we screen refugees for those special cases. We look for people who have serious medical conditions, If they're handicapped, pregnant women, families with tender age children, and people of persecuted groups like LGBTQ, or if they belong, like if they, they're fleeing because they belong to a certain political party.
Attorneys who take a vulnerable migrant's case try to get them some sort of humanitarian parole to be admitted and processed into the country, where they'll be able to seek asylum or another form of protection. When we get to the plaza, the father and son are ready to be picked up. Victor gives them their masks, rolls the car windows down, and then takes off. He calls someone from the shelter to let them know that we're on our way.
Hola, aquí tengo un señor y su hijo que tienen COVID. ¿Tienen lugar en el área de cuarentena?
Sí, ya está lleno, Victor.
Ah, okay.
Hoy entraron 20, tenemos como a 32. Uh-huh. Ya está lleno.
They say they don't have space. Victor needs a new plan. He's going to take them to a nearby apartment where they will have to shelter in place. Nonprofit, immigrant-friendly organizations pay for this and other apartments when the shelter is not an option. He says his job sometimes gets hard because he's not able to help everyone.
We tell people, okay, you know, we can't right now. You'll need to wait for a little bit, but we're working on it and people understand. And it's hard to say no, but it's never just no. It's no, but there's hope.
After driving around with Victor, I end up spending some time at the migrant camp. It's around midday and the temperature is near 100 degrees. I meet a group of people, mostly from Honduras, who have been living at the camp for more than 2 months.
Nosotros estamos en este parque. Cuidamos a la gente de aquí y también hemos recibido amenazas de muerte.
That's 21-year-old Dennis. He says he fled Honduras because of gang-related violence and threats. Dennis says back home, he was in the military, and he and a few others here have taken it upon themselves to help protect the migrants at the camp. As a result, he says, they've been threatened by members of the Gulf Cartel.
Sí, ellos dijeron que eran de la maña del cártel del Golfo. Ellos controlaban aquí. Ellos dijeron que si ellos querían, podían hacer una tirazón aquí. Podían secuestrar a la gente que quisieran que nosotros ya no los metiéramos en eso porque los iban a matar. Los dijeron así.
They've even interfered a few times when members of the cartel have threatened or tried to take migrants from their tents at night. Mario, a Honduran who is the unofficial leader of this group, says people he suspects that are affiliated with the cartel have come into the camp and recorded video and taken photos of them. I believe him. While walking around the camp, a man took out his phone, followed me around, and pointed his phone at me, as if he was recording or taking photos. Wendy, a migrant from El Salvador, is also living at the camp with her 11-year-old son. She says she came here because gangs were trying to recruit her son. She recently tried to cross the border.
Me agarraron migración de Estados Unidos, pero yo les dije a ellos de que yo traía un documento el cual yo podía, porque yo venía huyendo de mi país, y ellos me dijeron de que por COVID no estaban aceptando.
Wendy and her son were quickly returned, but she plans to wait here until the border reopens. While in Reynosa, I also stopped by Senda de Vida, the nearby shelter where migrants like Wendy, Dennis, and Mario would rather spend their nights at than at the plaza. It's only about a mile away from the camp.
So right now what's happening is that they have brought about 10 people from the plaza, you know, to get COVID tested because they are going to be moving into the shelter here. But the people that are here that were brought from the plaza, they are people who are considered, you know, from vulnerable populations. I see a woman who is pregnant. There's also another woman who has a very young child. Anywhere between, I would say, maybe 2 to 3 months old. And there's also someone else who doesn't look very well right now. So, yeah, they're about to get tested.
These are migrants that Victor has identified as vulnerable and has brought here. A nonprofit named Global Response Management that provides medical care to migrants at this shelter is doing COVID testing today. Brendan Tucker is their Reynosa project coordinator.
What you got is people trying to get out of the plaza, get into here, and they're working as fast as they can to double the size of it. But, you know, how long until this isn't enough space? And then there's nowhere else to double the space, you know? I don't see the plaza going anywhere anytime soon.
He also worked out of the migrant camp in Matamoros with GRM.
When we showed up last month to check it out to see what it would look like, and there was maybe 100 people in the gazebo in the plaza. And that looked a little bit like 2018 in the summer when people first started arriving. And then, you know, a few weeks later, it looked like Matamoros did in 2019 with everybody in the plaza.
Brendan says they also test migrants who are about to leave the shelter and be allowed into the U.S. with the help of an attorney. I asked Kenji about this process.
Those sort of spaces for these exemptions for humanitarian reasons are available to a very small number of people each day, because CBP limits how many people they're willing to process at the ports of entry, and that's not sufficient.
He also says it's not a public system, so not every individual can sign up.
So asylum seekers who maybe don't speak Spanish or who aren't well connected to the network of NGOs or are staying in a shelter will not have any knowledge of how to access this exception process.
Several news outlets have reported that the Biden administration plans to wind down Title 42 expulsions. The goal is reportedly to begin to allow families into the U.S. by the end of July, and then individual adults by the end of the summer.
I hope that moving forward, things will go a bit quicker, because we're not just talking about, you know, pieces of paper, policies that need to be addressed. We're talking about human beings who are waiting in danger or being returned to danger actively by the same government.
The day after I visited Reynosa, there was a massacre of at least 14 people in the city. Local officials attribute it to the Gulf Cartel, the same Dennis and Mario say have threatened them for protecting their fellow migrants. Since June 23rd, the Biden administration has processed more than 12,500 people into the country under the MPP wind-down. A DHS spokesperson told Latino USA that at this time, the agency will continue to enforce the CDC's Title 42 Public Health Authority. As for Maribel, she made it to this side of the river safely. But while both she and Diana are now in the United States, their fates, their future in this country, are still up in the air.
Since taking office, President Joe Biden has formed a task force to reunite families that were separated under the Trump administration's zero tolerance policy. Biden has also extended temporary protected status to people from Yemen and from Haiti and has opened it up for Venezuelans. The Biden administration is also pushing a plan to extend citizenship to more than 11 million undocumented immigrants, though this would not be anytime soon. Meanwhile, immigrant rights activists continue to call on Biden to end Title 42 for everyone and to end for-profit immigrant detention. This episode was produced by Reynaldo Leaños Jr. and edited by Andrea Lopez Cruzado. It was mixed by Julia Caruso. The Latino USA team includes Marta Martinez, Mike Sargent, Julieta Martinelli, Victoria Estrada, Patricia Zulbarán, Ginny Montalvo, Alejandra Salazar, and Julia Rocha, with help from Raúl Pérez. Our supervising senior engineer is Stephanie LeBeau. Additional engineering by Leah Shaw Dameron, with help from Gabriela Baez. Our digital editor is Luis Luna. Our New York Women's Foundation Ignite Fellow is Maria Esquinca. Our intern is Oscar de Leon. Our theme music was composed by Zenia Rubinos. If you like the music you heard on this episode, stop by latinousa.org and check out our weekly Spotify playlist. I'm your host and executive producer, Maria Hinojosa. Join us again on our next episode. And in the meantime, look for us on your social media. I'll see you there. Ciao.
Latino USA is made possible in part by the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation. The Ford Foundation, working with visionaries on the front lines of social change worldwide. And the Wincote Foundation.
I'm Maria Hinojosa. Next time on Latino USA, a portrait of Carmen Maria Machado, the award-winning writer whose work pushes the boundaries of fiction, memoir, and contemporary horror. That's next time on Latino USA.